I'll start by apologizing if I let anybody on. The men are already used to this. With the women, it's usually Chavis Havavis every week. But the men are already used to that. I don't consider myself committed to titles that I gave in advance. Because, again, the way I operate is that I have my thoughts going through my head and whatever I'm up to. So we spent 2 weeks on what we entitled The Jewish Woman versus the Greek Empire. We had advertised that this would be part three, but with your permission and mechila, I'm not going to do that now. We'll move more toward the general core aspects of the essence of Hanukkah in the broad way, if you'll allow that. Okay, you know, I remember when we were in my very brief stint of high school education, I did all of about a year plus before my father pulled me out and sent me to Eretz Yisrael. So they told us that when you do a book report, there's the conflict, and then there's the plot, there's the conflict, and then there's the, how do they call, like how it all ends up? The resolution. Oh, they, right. So here, we the last 2 weeks, really, we were talking about the conflict. When we were talking about the story of Hanukkah, we were talking about the conflict, the struggle, right? The assault, the defense. And now I want to talk about, Bezras Hashem, about the resolution, the end of the story, what we're actually celebrating, what we're actually celebrating. Okay. So I want to start as follows. We'll start from this angle. It's going to be approached from many angles, but we'll start from this angle. Sometimes people wonder, and this question could be asked in many different levels. It can be asked from a very further away from level. It could be asked on a from level also. When it comes to details of halacha, sometimes people ask about a general mitzvah. You know, why is this mitzvah so important? Why should this matter to Hashem? Those of us who grew up from, who have been from for many years, that doesn't bother us as much, but sometimes there may be questions about particulars. We might call minutia, the fine details of halacha. Why should this make a difference? Why should that make a difference? And details of Hilchas Shabbos, right? We all understand the beauty of Shabbos. We all understand the beauty of Shabbos. But then the details get so complex and so intricate. Muktzah. Moving through the Suda, there are so many different halachas you have to take into account in terms of Boirer, Bishul, which could still be relevant when you are actually already in the middle of the meal and not cooking anything anymore. And one can wonder why does this detail make a difference to Hashem? Why should he care, right? So I want to approach this question, this theme is actually one of the central themes of the Sefer Kuzari. It's a theme that's threading basically the entire Sefer. And that is as follows. I'll present the answer like this. I'll present it first in like a more very broad way that you might say is more of a dig than an answer. But the Kotzker Rebbe is known to have said, why would I want to worship a God who I can completely understand? Right? In other words, we're dealing with something much bigger than us. I want to elaborate on that in a way that I hope will really bring the point home and connect us to the significance of our day-to-day lives in a much, much bigger, richer way. That is the following. So we'll do this in a couple of layers. Anytime you have a relationship, this is something we've discussed often. I'm going to discuss it again. Anytime you have a relationship, there are chukim. There are chukim in every human relation. Chukim is not something, it's not a concept, meaning things that you can't understand, but you just have to abide by. It's not a concept that it's limited to Yiddishkeit per se. It's limited to Hashem per se. You have chukim in every relationship, right? If you think about it. For, I've said this often, maybe a little embarrassing, but I've said it enough times that I've gotten over the embarrassment. But for me, it was very often a chayk. Why a messy living room should bother anybody? It was a chayk. Like, say this, what's the big deal? So there are things around. Who cares? You can still do what you need to do. You know, in the earlier years of our marriage, I felt like if things got a little too tight on Friday afternoon, so you don't finish straightening up the living room and kitchen, and you can have a beautiful Shabbos in the middle of a mess also. Okay. And then what's that? Oh, there are other husbands like that?
Okay. Because the queen is coming, it's Shabbos.
What's that?
The queen is coming.
Therefore we'll make a beautiful kiddush, a beautiful smiras.
Wouldn't you clean the house?
So I'm just gonna ask you a straightforward question. Is that the whole issue, or is there also a personal aspect? What's that? Sure there is. All right, so you know what? I can connect to that. But I couldn't connect to the, sometimes, let's say, I would have a consideration of, you know, maybe there are other more important things that need to be done in terms of getting ready for Shabbos. And you know what? It dawned on me at some point that, no, if I, for example, would not like the idea of sitting on three thumbtacks on my chair at the Shabbos, even though I could still sing beautiful smiras, right? So for my wife, sitting in a messy living room is maybe not three thumbtacks, but it's a very similar concept, right? Okay. I imagine that many of our listeners will identify with that, right? Okay. Now, you know what? For me, that was a chayk. That was a chayk. But you know what? You learn to appreciate that if you have a relationship with another person, certainly when we're talking about a man and a woman, right? Very, very different, right? Another chayk. This is a positive chayk. You can get away so easy. Bouquet of flowers. I don't understand. You can't eat them. How do you do with them? They sit on the table for a few days until they rot. It's like a pach shmita. A vase is like a pach shmita. You know the shmita can? You leave it there until it rots, and then you get rid of it. Then you're allowed to get rid of it, right? You know what? It achieves great things. It achieves great things. It's a chayk. It's a chayk. And you know what? So here we're talking about men and women. The truth is, it's like that in all relationships. People are the same. Certainly when you're talking about men and women, they have to be different because they have to be covering different areas of that unit that's called the operating Jewish home. But in every close relationship, there are likes and dislikes and sensitivities that one will have and the other won't. And if you are, you know, on the one hand, you want to make the other person happy, but you're going to keep yourself limited to your own narrow frame of reference, you will do anything. I'll be very machmir on my dalach soni l'chavachlitavi. Whatever I like, I'll do for him. Whatever I don't like, I won't do. And that's it. I won't see beyond that. Okay? If so, I would never buy flowers because they mean nothing to me. I wouldn't bother cleaning up because I'm not bothered by the mess. But you understand that if you want a real relationship, you have to be ready to acknowledge that there are sensitivities, likes, dislikes, etc., that you might not identify with, but they're very, very real. If the relationship is not only you, right? If the relationship is another person, then you have to realize that the other person has sensitivities that you might not. This is like this, certainly in marriage, but in every other relationship also, in any of our close relationship also. Chukim are a built part of any real relationship. I'll give you another example that I often use. That I often use is that I once asked an Ashir, does anybody here have a problem with this is the even with this kind of blackboard, it's kind of a whiteboard. If I were to go and scrape my nails on it, would anybody mind? Everybody would mind. Most people I know would mind, and I would mind also. But I once asked an Ashir if there's anybody who doesn't have a problem with it. One person who said, no problem. No. So then the question is, this person, can you explain to him what's wrong? Not ruining the blackboard, right? What's wrong with it? Everybody around you, what bothers you about it? Explain it to me and I'll honor it. Explain it to me and I'll respect it, right? I can't explain it. But yes, it causes us all a very disgusting feeling, right? So now the question is, you don't understand it, but do you understand that this is something very, very real? And can you respect it? Can you honor it, right? Very, very major ingredient in having a true, real relationship is being able to acknowledge that there are things outside of your own frame of reference. If you're not willing to operate with that, you can't expect to have any kind of real relationship. Everybody okay with the competition? We'll be okay. I'll try to speak louder. So now, if we understand that that's the case with another human, when we're talking about Hashem, do we all understand, isn't it an obvious premise that we are talking about something much, much, much more immense than anything human? That's question number one. Obviously, the answer to that, everybody will say, is yes. Do we also understand that it's real, that it's not just fake? Also to that, the answer would be yes. So if so, what right do we have to come and say, Hashem, I'm going to tell you what I think makes sense for you? If you think about it in these terms, you want a real relationship with Hashem. It has to be on his terms. What choice do you have? You're a human being, limited. We don't think even with another person, your frame of reference is so limited. So, I'm trying to. Even when we're dealing with other people, you have to acknowledge that there's a limit to your sensitivities, to your understanding. Just one minute. When you're dealing with Hashem, so it's very easy to come and say, why should he care, right? Why should he care? But if Hashem tells us that he does, you're going to go figure out, well, Hashem, you shouldn't, because it really doesn't matter. That's basically coming and saying, I don't really acknowledge something real here. This is step number one in approaching the point. So a question?
I just wanted to bring up I think it's very important that we have that vision of relationships. The thing about human-being relationships, equal relationship, like husband-wife, is that there's compromise, that there's a discussion. What are my sensitivities? What are your sensitivities? How we can... and with Hashem, there isn't. There's not that. Like Rav just said, you know, it's if you want a relationship with Hashem, you have to do it his way.
That's right.
So it's...
How do we apply that to the Bashal? So the truth is, you're right, this is where a relationship with a Hashem supersedes any human relationship that we have. If we want the privilege, if we appreciate the immensity of having a relationship with Hashem, then it's true. We appreciate that. We accept this on his terms. Now, it's not a one-sided relationship. We understand that he is busy showering us with what he considers good for us, right? As we've been discussing in Shara Bitochen, it's a lot more than we can understand is good for us. But we also have to be ready to accept that if we want a relationship with him, it's on his terms, not on ours. We're not going to dictate what a Hashem should want. That would be undermining the whole concept of who Hashem is and what the immensity of having a relationship with him. Now, this is mamish a thread that a thing that threads the entire Sefer Kuzari. But I'm going to also bring it out in another way. We don't even understand ourselves. It comes in terms of coming and saying, I think this, yes, this, not. You know who you are? You're a neshama. You know how big a neshama is? We are oblivious to who we really are. We are experiencing a tiny little part of who we really are. So even when we're coming and saying, we don't think this is so important. You know why? Because that's because you're only living your toe. You're not aware of the needs of the arms and the eyes and the ear. The toe has no need for glasses. The toe cannot relate to the dilemma of contact lenses versus glasses. What difference does it make, right? We're talking about ourselves here. And neshama is something so immense. We're putting Toyolam Hazeh, our consciousness is immensely dimmed and dulled, such that we're not even aware that there's anything more to us. But we talked about Kiviyachol. Our sensitivities towards Hashem. It's even more than that. It's about what's good for our neshama and not good for our neshama. It's like a kid coming and saying, I have absolutely no need for antibiotics. Every one of our kids made that argument. I'll be fine without it, right? It's because the kid has a very, very limited understanding of himself, right? Our kids can go without sleep. They don't need sleep for their well-being, right? Ask them, right? Sleep is not necessary. Antibiotics are not necessary. All these things are not necessary. There's no problem. You can live a fully, plenty of nutrition on taffies alone, right? What do you need anything more than that? But once again, the kid has a six-year-old concept of himself. So basically what we're boiling it down to is the understanding that we are dealing with something so much bigger than we realize, so above and beyond. And if we're given that privilege, we understand that we have no choice but to just to get it dictated to us, even just in terms of our own neshama. Right? We understand ourselves to the extent of our physical experience in that little window of 120 years, which is a tiny fraction of our lives. Right? We have no idea about what nourishment we need for after that. So what are we coming and telling Hashem? So even just in terms of ourselves, it's like negotiating with your three-year-old what his needs are. And you know, that might also answer the question of compromise. With your three-year-old, it can't be give and take in terms of what his needs are, right? So, this is the essence of understanding that the Jew, the Yisrael, is living a life connected to the divine. He's living really in a divine reality. He's connected to Hashem. Everything he's busy doing is really having effects up there, in your own world up there, in your relationship with Hashem. And it's about understanding that, yeah, we are largely operating in the dark. And with the grace of Hashem, who tells us down to the last detail exactly what it takes to have our neshama in its healthiest place and to have our relationship with Him, our connection with Him, as robust, as solid, as healthy as it can possibly be. Why? Because again, I think it was Rabbi Kaplan who expressed it this way. You know, people say, I serve Hashem in my way. He says, we don't serve Hashem in our way. We serve Hashem in His way. That is the basic significance of having a true, real relationship with Hashem. Now, if we understand this, I want to move now to explain. And here we're slowly approaching Chanukah. And this is really a whole different dimension of the discussion. There's a very understated parsha in the Torah. Parsha Shmini is an understated parsha in the Torah. This is the parsha where the Jewish people complete the Mishkan. They complete the Mishkan. They're waiting to see what's going to happen. Hashem said that He will reside in the Mishkan. You have to appreciate what that means. The Jewish people have the power. The world is a physical world. Kiviyachol. Kiviyachol. A million times. Hashem withdrew. Right? And he left a certain pocket of physicality. But you know what? He didn't really withdraw. He sent ambassadors of His, representatives of His, into that tiny pocket of existence that we call Olam Hazeh. Those ambassadors are us. We're His representatives in this world, and we are expected to bring the divinity into this world. We're expected to kiviyachol, give Hashem, if we call it this way, a landing pad in this world. This is actually the term that's used for in this farm. Merkava Lashchina. We can talk about it in contemporary terms. I kind of think of it as like a landing pad. Makes it possible for the kiviyachol, for the aircraft or whatever it is to land, right? We are the ones who provide the infrastructure for divine presence in this world. And yeah, again, the term in this farm is Merkava Lashchina. We are the bearers, the chariots of the Shechina in this world. How do we do that? We do that by following the recipe of bringing godliness into this world. This was laid out to the Jewish people. When they were told to make a Mishkan, they were told, you can bring me into this world and I will dwell among you. They appreciated the immensity of what that meant. They took a tour in the machaneh of the camp of the Jewish people in the Midbar. And here's where Reuven, Shevet Reuven resides. Here's where Shevet Shimon resides. Here's where Moshe resides. See, the tent where Moshe resides. The tent where Aaron resides. And what's this very elaborate edifice in the middle? That's where the master of the entire universe resides. So appreciate it. We take three steps forward when we start Shemana Esrei, right? It's three steps forward. As far as the Rishonim say this, what's the significance of the three steps forward? In Shemana Esrei, we kind of emulate the Malach in Shemana Esrei. If a Malach, so to speak, again, I'm saying this without properly understanding what it means. If a Malach needed to come to Hashem for something, where did he have to go? He had to come to Machane Yisrael, the Jewish camp. That's where Hashem is. That's Hashem's address. And he had to move through the three Machanes, Machane Yisrael, Machane Levia, and Machane Shechina, three steps in order to approach Hashem, move through the Jewish camp. And this is why we take three steps forward, in emulation of that, before we begin our Shemana Esrei. This was something that the Jewish people, they were, after seeing what Hashem was in Yetzias Mitzrayim, they were enthralled by this prospect. And they were given a very, very specific plan of how to go about it. All the details of the Mishkan. The more precise it will be. Now, why should that make a difference? Why does the threads have to be twined of six different types, right? The Tcheles and the Argoman, the Ashani and the Sheish, some were doubled, some weren't, had to be twined. I get a different one with the same color. What does it make a difference? Again, we're talking about a recipe for creating godliness. You understand anything about it? It's like if my wife gives me a recipe to follow and I decide, well, the white-looking powder is all the same, right? So if you're out of one kind, you use the other kind. What difference should it make? Well, no difference until you taste it, right? So here Hashem is saying, we're talking godliness here. Follow it to a T and you will see the divine effect. You will see the Shechina manifest among you. They put in that effort. They did it to a T. Very, very precise. All the detail involved, both in terms of the Mishkan itself and in terms of the Karbanis offered in order to do it, as dictated by Hashem exactly. There was no saying, well, I think this is what Hashem would like. Right? And they did it with enthusiasm and passion. And they were waiting to see, did it work? Can we actually make that effect? And it says that they did it, right? Nothing happened. And just to make a long story short, right? Moshe and Aaron went in again. They davened, and then they saw the fire come down from Shemayim. They actually saw the Shechina. They saw the Shechina had arrived. It says, they all just went wild with enthusiasm, and they fell on their face. It was a historic event that's understated. It's understated. To appreciate what you're reading when you're seeing that in Parsha Shmini, the thrill of seeing that happen, Hashem came down on Har Sinai, that was kind of like a matana min hashamayim. They didn't do anything towards it, except prepare themselves appropriately. But then they were told, now it's in your hands to create that effect. That's what the Ramban says. It was a continuation, mamish, of the presence of the Shechina at Sinai, where Hashem appeared of his own accord. It says, now, if you set the stage right, if you bring me down, I'll be there. And they went wild from enthusiasm and understanding that, wow, this is in our hands. And really, this is a mashal. This is a mashal for what every Jew can do. Every Jew can be a mikdash. Right? The mikdash was a mashal for the Jew. Mishachanti b'soicham. I'll dwell amongst them in each individual by connecting through the means that Hashem provides. You create that exact infrastructure that can bring the Shechina down. And then you can become a carrier of the Shechina. By following the instructions precisely. Now, how do we get from here to Chanukah? It's not even Parsha Shemini. How do we get from here to Chanukah? Let's appreciate the significance of what actually happened on Chanukah. We talked about the precision and the detail. And you know what? That's not what I want to talk about today. There are two aspects to it. There's the following the detail to a T. You want to feel spiritual gratification? Do what feels right to you. You want to create a godly connection? follow his instructions to a T, right? That's the difference between serving Hashem in your way or serving Hashem in his way. But besides the instructions following it to a T, which can some, and here, of course, I imagine you realize that here we're understanding all the details on the Chashabbos. Shabbos is one of the most powerful means of bris, means connection. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash today. Shabbos is one of the foremost mitzvahs that actually keeps the Shechina connected to us. Perhaps that's reflected in the fact that there's so much detail in Shabbos. But that's just one example, of course, right? We know that that lives as Jews, because we're meant to be carrying and maintaining that divine connection the whole time. There's so many details involved, because yes, it's not a simple business to be able to carry the Shechina in this world, to act as an ambassador of the Shechina, as the one bringing the Shechina into this world. But here, I try to infuse the understanding of the technicalities with its significance. But then there's the other dimension, the lathe, the dedication, the passion involved. That is what infuses the details with that much more passion, with that much more power. One without the other is not sufficient. We don't want to get to a situation, this is always the toss-up. You don't want to get to a situation where you become very, very detail-focused, but it becomes empty of you, right? We want you there with all your heart, with all your mind. We want you involved. The more, we can either use the terms passion, dedication there is there, or we can use the terms yira, ahava, right? Akaras HaToyv, the more that is infusing the details, the more powerful the connection will be. Now let's talk about Hanukkah. After these prefaces, I think that 15 minutes will suffice. The system was already running. The Beis HaMikdash, they knew exactly what they needed to do. They had the system in place. The Beis HaMikdash was the main power plant of Shechina in this world. The Avodah of the Kohanim was activating that. The more precise and the more intensely focused the Avodah of the Kohanim was, the more powerful the presence of the Shechina was. The presence of the Shechina could also be slight. It could also be weaker. It could be stronger. It could be much more intense. Right? There are Avodahs in the Beis HaMikdash that can be done b'di'evad. It can be done l'chatchila. The more quality they are in terms of the detail, the more stronger the presence will be. The more intensely the Kohanim are there, right, the more passionate, that's the Kohanim were characterized by their zeal, by their passion, the more intense it will be. Kohanim carried a great responsibility. They were bringing Shechina into all areas of Jewish life around Eretz Yisrael. My field, right, my wheat field, my vineyard, the quality of the grapes depended on what the Kohanim were bringing into the Beis HaMikdash, which would then spread around Eretz Yisrael. The quality of my grapes and the quality of my learning, and how much Siyata Dishmaya I would get to really be able to grasp it properly. In the time of Hanukkah, the system was in place. But what started happening? What happened was a gradual process of what the Bach terms Nisrapu Ba'avoida. They started becoming more lax. The dedication started waning. The enthusiasm started waning. That was an effect of Greek, the Hellenism, the Greek culture making its inroads. Jewish culture has one agenda only, connection with Hashem. That's the goal, that's the aspiration. Everything else is inside that box, inside that framework. As the winds of Hellenism, as the winds of Greek culture were spreading over the world, right? And in Eretz Yisrael, we started having the weaklings who were starting to bow to the new era, the new golden age that was conquering the entire world. Like the backward life of the entire world was moving into a new stage, a new enlightened stage, a new philosophical stage. This was the new age. This was the future, right? And in Yerushalayim, there's obviously, it should be obvious that the there wasn't black and white in terms of Yavnim, and there were the loyal, right? If you think about it in realistic terms, it couldn't have been as black and white as that, right? Greek culture made its inroads, and then you had, presumably, a spectrum, right? A spectrum of quite how much. They set up a gymnasium, right? A corrupt Kohen Gadol to the office. It started with a man by the name of Jason, where they paid the Greek rulers, and they bought the position of Kohen Gadol, set up a Greek gymnasium right next door to Beis HaMikdash, on Har HaBayis, right near the Beis HaMikdash. The Kohanim could go recreate there, right? Person needs to refresh himself, person needs exercise, etc. But you know what? Something a little bit more than that happened. Is what? I'm not even getting into the fact that they actually had their deities there. Forget that. Let's just put all that on the side. There was values. The recreation was more than just recreation. It was more than just getting fresh air. It was more than just exercising, right? It turned into a whole value. It turned into a whole culture of the competition, the sports, the physique, all that. The whole, the aspirations started to become competing aspirations, competing goals, competing agendas. My passion started becoming split, right? What I was enthusiastic for in life, split enthusiasm, which means that there's already a little bit less. Now, I didn't have to start with dropping anything. I'm going to continue to do everything, but I have other interests also. As that built up, if there are other interests, other aspirations, other enthusiasms, then it's inevitably going to come at the expense of your passions here. Within the same kanvod kireva shah. So you have a kohen who previously all of his fulfillment was, right, putting all of his energies into doing the avodah in the Beis HaMikdash at the top level possible, right? But now he had other things on his mind, other things, and sometimes it would just become perfunctory. I know the basic halachas, let's get it done because, you know, there's a major competition next week, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this is, I'm elaborating on the very brief, terse term that the Bach uses of nisrapu ba'avoida. Things became lax. They had the people for whom it completely took over and they dropped everything. And then he had people for whom competing interests, competing agendas, competing enthusiasms. And you understand that theoretically, your heart doesn't have to be complete. You could still do the details. Well, the details really require a lot of attention and a lot of meticulousness. It's going to be cut corners. Once you're not there passionately, once your agenda, once your aspiration is not to do this in the top level, there are going to be cut corners here, cut corners there. And yes, the quality of the avodah started waning. This was epitomized in what we're describing with Beis HaMikdash, but you understand that this was representative of a reality that was starting to prevail across Eretz Yisrael. And Hashem, we mentioned in the previous weeks that this is what was tricky about Golus Yavan. Golus Yavan wasn't like a neat break out of Eretz Yisrael. Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. No, Beis HaMikdash is standing. Let the avodah continue. Meanwhile, at one point, that also not. But it's okay. We just want to drain some of the enthusiasm, to drain some of the dedication, some of the passion, some of the feelings, right? Continue doing it. But let's be, you know, just poke holes in the intensity. And this is what was going on. Until Hashem finally come and said, I'm losing my people. The skeleton is still there. But the ruach, the lave, right, is just leaking out. Then Hashem came and said, took a drastic step. Speaking through Antiochus, as Hashem often does, often we get the messages of Hashem through the mouths of our enemies. Hashem basically, in essence, to the Jewish people, I have to choose one or the other. Distinct. There's going to be a clean break now. You are either, you want to keep Shabbos now? You're going to have to really, really do it with self-sacrifice. Move out of your house, move into a cave. You ever been in a real deep, dark cave in any of your tours? There's one right outside here at Beit Shemesh, Ma'arat HaTaumim. Go there sometimes with the kids just to appreciate what it means. Go there in the middle of the day. In the middle of the day. What's that? That's right. The back cave, you've been there? Yeah. You go in there, you walk in. 90 seconds in, you're in pitch black. You can't see anything without a flashlight. It's cold. Middle of summer, slimy, wet, right? And that's what it is there, right? And you're going with your entire family. You want to keep Shabbos? You're going to have to be extremely dedicated. Don't just keep Shabbos in a basic way. You want to stay at home comfortably? No Shabbos, right? And you put to death. You have to be ready to risk death in order to keep Shabbos. In order to continue, you want to consider yourself loyal to Hashem, you're going to have to muster up that enthusiasm, that dedication that may have kind of dissipated with the whole reality going on. Here we needed a cry of Mila Hashem Eli. Who is going to restore the state of affairs through absolute dedication. Going all the way. Being ready to give it all up for Hashem. And this, you had those who were completely loyal in the first place. You had those who had dropped it all. And then there was the spectrum of those who said, oh, 1 minute. I did not mean to go this far. If so, boom, I'm moving myself all the way over to Mila Hashem Eli. Then you had the others who said, yeah, just let go of it all already. Move over to the Hellenizers. Families were split in this way, right? Okay, so what happened? These people did apply themselves with dedication. Our great ancestors, they were ready to, they took up the banner of Mila Hashem Eli. We're going to go all the way now for Shmiras Torah and Mitzvahs. Self-sacrifice, passion. They took on the Greeks, right? They fought a losing battle, a hopeless battle. They said, yes, we're gonna stick at our necks now. We're ready to give it all up. We're ready to give up our lives. And they battled, they took on the Greek Empire in a dogged war, which was also psychologically, it wasn't just that it was a challenge in terms of, it's tough to fight a Greek Empire. I never tried, but it's not easy to take on a Greek Empire, right? But also the psychological aspect of it, of why you're fighting a losing battle. Anybody with their head on his shoulders sees that it's a matter of 10, 20, 30, 40 years. There isn't going to be any of this left anyways. So you have to just fight until the end, gain another few years until it's all extinguished. This is the story of the Jewish people. This is the story of the Jewish people, right? So many points throughout history was clear that there isn't a continuation. We're still here against all odds. And the significance of the Ner Chanukah was that they fought, they gave it their all. Back in the days of the Mishkan, they earned that demonstration of Hashem's presence through the precision, right? Through following the details to a T. This was already a concept they were used to by now. The story, the significance of the Nes of Chanukah was not just the fact that, okay, they had the menorah burning for the 8 days. And they just want to talk about that. You don't need a Nes to enable a mitzvah to happen. That wasn't the significance of the Nes. The significance of the Nes was Hashem coming and showing. Now, you gave me your passion. You gave me your dedication. You've brought me down. I had departed from the Mishkan, from the Beis HaMikdash, because, again, the battery of your enthusiasm, of your dedication, of your passion, had leaked out. Once it leaked out, the connection was lost. I drifted away. The Shekhinah drifted away. You brought back that passion. You lit the fires again with the oil of your dedication, of your self-sacrifice, of your passion. You brought me back. And that was demonstrated through the Nes of the Chanukah. That was the significance of the Nes. The reason that they went so crazy, they were so enthusiastic about that Nes was because that was what they saw. It looked like, that's it. The curtains were closing on Yiddishkeit. They fought. They gave it their all in a dogged losing battle. And suddenly they saw this Nes, which was Hashem demonstrating, you did it. Yes, your self-sacrifice, your passionate dedication will be crowned with me being there. And I want to stress something. This is really the point we have to make. The story of Hanukkah was not, it did not end and they lived happily ever after. You have to realize the historic facts. The Nes Chanukah was right in the middle of the struggle. It got much worse after that. The Chashmonaim were driven from Yerushalayim again after that. The Shema got even worse after that. All the Maccabim except one were killed in battle. People might not necessarily know this. All the Maccabim, including Yudah Maccabi, were killed in battle. Except one, I forgot if it was Shimon or Yochanan, one of the two ended up making a treaty with the Greeks later on. They recognized him as a Jewish monarch. It was much later down the road. There were another more than 20 years of bloody battle with many, many losses. But what? They already had the koyach to continue that battle, that dogged battle, that because now that Hashem showed them, there might be dark times ahead. In fact, you have 2,000 years of galus ahead of you. You maintain that passion and dedication, I'll be there. That's what he showed us through the Neilus Chanukah. I'm here. I'm crowning your efforts with success. This is what we're celebrating. This is what we're celebrating. We're not celebrating something that happened at that time. We're celebrating the statement that Hashem made. Look, even when it seems like everything is closing down, the whole system is shutting down, it won't. You put in your dedication, your passion, and I will be there. It'll continue that way through the 2,000 years of Galus. And you want to see that now? Tonight, step out into the street. Step out into the street and look at you should make an exercise of doing this. It can be a powerful experience if you do it right. Walk down your block and look at all the menorahs in the window. Realize that you're not seeing a commemoration of a nes that happened 2,000 years ago. You're seeing a nes Chanukah of Tavshin Pei Beis. Because there were many points in history since then when anybody rational would say, you're not going to see menorahs and candles anymore. Right? They blotted it out in this part of the world, it flared up in that part of the world. They blotted it out there, it flared up over there. Do what they might, they will not be able to get rid of it. As long as we're here putting in our dedication, then despite it all, in their face, right? Those Neres Chanukah will still be burning. It's mamish, it's the same Nes. Continuing now, experience that. It's Kedai. Walk through the street, look at an apartment building, and look at all those candles, and you are seeing Shechina Shruya B'Yisrael. Shechina Shruya B'Yisrael. That's the statement of the Neis Chanukah. That's what they celebrated. The fact that, yes, we have the ability of keeping that divine connection, of keeping the Shechina on us. The celebration is that. Shechina Shruya B'Yisrael. Not just then, but now also. Look in your own window. Look in the windows around you and see and sense and appreciate Shechina Shruya B'Yisrael. Freilich and Chanukah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Just stop.